Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show here on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, our very important newsmaker interviews are with Amy Zamudo and Joanne Stanley. They're with Housing for the Homeless, and we'll be talking about a deeply disturbing topic, local hospitals that are dumping medically vulnerable homeless seniors on the streets. The stories these women have to share are shocking, and they're asking for public help to bring dignity and compassion to the treatment of these seniors, including some with dementia. Then, from Public News Service, we'll have some national news headlines, including reactions to former President Donald Trump's indictment on charges related to hush money paid to porn star Stormy Daniels, a possible compromise on gun legislation in Congress, and the latest Republican candidate to announce a run for the presidency. From Lemon Grove, we'll have an update on the budget situation, which is looking brighter than in recent years. On Tribal Beat, today we'll be honoring the life of former Barona Tribal Chairwoman Josephine Romero, who passed away recently at age 94, but whose amazing legacy lives on. And finally, on Sounds of History, after the rainiest winter on record here, we'll take a look back at an even bigger storm, a hurricane, Hurricane Kathleen, that once tore through our region and the havoc that it wrought right here in San Diego's East County. Thankfully, listeners, the forecast ahead is for a return of warm, sunny weather. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. And today, my very special guests are Amy Zamudio and Joanne Stanley. They are the co-founders of Housing for the Homeless.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. So, you have held a press conference along with healthcare officials calling for a hearing in Sacramento on patient dumping of unsheltered people from hospitals. How did you find out that this was going on? I thought there was a state law, SB 1152, that was supposed to make it illegal to do that as of January 2019. So how prevalent is this?
It's a pervasive problem, and we are very much on the front lines of homelessness in San Diego, and we are very centered on older adults experiencing homelessness. And as we know, as folks continue to age, along with aging comes a whole host of medical conditions, whether we're housed or unhoused.
Correct.
We can't stop that time clock. We can't stop aging. So being that we are so proximate with older adults experiencing homelessness, it was just very clear to us what was going on with many of the guests that we have in our hotel and many of the older adults in our homeless outreach program.
Okay. So this is going on, but let me quote a little bit from your letter to the chairs of the Assembly and State Senate Human Services Committees. You state, "We watch when we do outreach at night, we watch with horror as people are forced into the night with inadequate clothing, disoriented, with no plan for where to go while buses are not running. In San Diego, an average of 108 people a day are being discharged from San Diego hospitals." That's the city, I understand, not counting whatever may go on elsewhere, "without proper care and concern. And there are far too many for our small organization to serve." So again, how did you find out that this is going on? And can you give us an idea of which hospitals are doing this?
So if I may interject, this is Joanne. Mm-hmm. Amy goes out each night And in 2022, she documents photographically every person she meets. She met over 500 people who were discharged to the streets between the times of 12 midnight and 5 a.m.
Wow.
The buses stop running at 11 and don't start up again until 5 a.m. She can't share any of these photographs because a lot of them show people in dire straits, dragging themselves across the sidewalk.
Awful.
Obviously having defecated all over themselves.
Oh, sad.
They drag themselves to the bus stop. They're in a bathroom desert, so there is no place for them to use the toilet. And, you know, we're not aiming at demonizing the hospitals because they don't have any place to send these people.
Mm-hmm.
This is a systemic issue that really rests on the city council, the mayor, the board of supervisors,
correct,
the people who are in charge of creating the infrastructure.
I have to ask, is this happening outside the city of San Diego in the unincorporated areas of East County, or for that matter, anywhere else in the county that you're aware of?
That's a really good question. We've gotten calls from people at Grossmont Hospital who have been discharged wanting to know if we could provide them with a hotel room or if they could enter our program for older adults experiencing homelessness.
Now, to be very clear, can you explain exactly what the law allows? If somebody's homeless and the time comes for them to be discharged, let's say they've had surgery or maybe they're not really in a condition to be discharged back to the streets, what exactly does the law require or prohibit a hospital from doing?
They require that there is a plan that's made with the person that they understand,
mm-hmm,
and that is actionable. So they're also required to provide weather appropriate clothing, which almost everyone Amy has a photograph of is in their hospital gown and booties.
Oh,
so obviously no clothing. A lot of times people come in and they are, their clothing is so soiled it gets thrown away and they're not provided with new clothing.
Are these public or private hospitals that are doing this, or both?
We are very centered in Hillcrest, where we have UCSD Health.
So it's a public hospital.
Scripps Mercy.
Yes.
Scripps Mercy, which is private.
Scripps is private. So it's happening at both then. And
public,
you mentioned Grossmont. Are you aware, have they actually dumped anybody on the streets from Grossmont, or have they? What I've been told, I talked to somebody on the inside there, a source of mine, who said that as far as they know, this isn't happening there, that their protocol is supposed to be, if they have a homeless person ready for discharge, they call some of these service agencies and try to make arrangements for them to have a place to go.
That's completely untrue, because none of these agencies are even open at night, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this, we're talking about what's happening after hours. So who are they calling?
Okay.
Are they leaving a message on a recording?
So to be clear, so you've seen people discharge at night from Grossmont as well as from in San Diego.
So I want to be very clear. Have I visually seen that happen at Grossmont? No, ma'am. I have gotten calls,
mm-hmm,
from people who have been discharged from Grossmont, the individual experiencing homelessness, saying they have been discharged. Can you guys please provide me with a hotel room? I have nowhere to go.
Okay.
I'm in a wheelchair. I'm disabled.
Wow. So the hospital isn't making sure they have a place before they discharge them and send them out to the streets then.
Yeah. They give them a bus pass. And if the buses aren't running, they're supposed to, you asked what the law is supposed to provide. They're supposed to provide safe transport within 30 minutes or 30 miles. Handing someone a bus pass when they're in crisis and expecting them to drag themselves to a bus bench and sit there in the rain or cold for 3 hours till the buses start running again.
So it seems like a reasonable thing to ask would be maybe the law needs to be changed so they can't discharge somebody after a certain time of day. You know, maybe they have to discharge them during daylight hours, for example, while buses are still running.
Yeah, there's also the challenge with our seniors that many of them suffer from cognitive impairment, which has been shown to... the onset is 15 to 20 years sooner with people on the streets.
Wow. So they might get lost or not know where they're going.
Yeah. So when you have a conversation with someone about a discharge plan, you have to be sure that they actually understand what you're even saying or what they're agreeing to.
In your letter to these Assembly and Senate members, you state that there have been, in 2022, that's last year, 572 homeless people who died on our streets. I think that's about right from the coroner figures I've heard, a medical examiner. That is a tenfold increase since 2010. I'm wondering how many of those are people who'd been recently discharged from a hospital? Is it that, or is there a number of other causes responsible for this?
Well, that is a great question. We're trying, that's very difficult data to gather. And, you know, we saw that with Mr. Meade. We saw that with Mike. We had an elderly woman pass away over here in the Sports Arena District. And when the medical examiner came, and they took her body away and the police officers left, they left at the scene of her death her patient's belongings back, her hospital socks, her reverse aging magazine.
Oh my gosh.
All evidence that she had just been discharged from a hospital. And so I've been trying to kind of raise awareness that we need to be investigating these unhoused deaths on our streets, because we may find they were just discharged from a hospital.
And I hope that when you go up there to Sacramento, if you get the hearing that you're requesting, or for anybody else that you talk to, I hope we'll broaden this beyond the city of San Diego and ask them to investigate the entire county of San Diego, all of the hospitals out there. And of course, you've mentioned Grossmont as well as UCSD and Scripps in San Diego. You know, what about Kaiser? What about Alvarado? What about all the rest of them?
Well, Alvarado has patient dumped. We have a veteran that we were walking alongside, and the veteran had gone to Alvarado Hospital. They had a broken hip, and they were quickly exited back out to the streets, and they landed on the trolley there.
She can't even walk with it. That's crazy.
The thing is, it's all the hospitals.
It's happening across the country. This isn't just a California situation. That's why we're trying to not demonize the hospitals. They are the last touch point in a systemic failure to care for those who are most vulnerable in our society.
With somebody like a broken hip like that, why don't they send them to a rehab center? Is this a matter of, if you don't have insurance, if you had insurance, would they be sending you to a rehab center?
People experiencing homelessness absolutely do have insurance. We had another gentleman, I might have just hundreds of examples.
I was making the assumption maybe they didn't, but perhaps they do have insurance.
No, they have insurance. And so then the other day we had a gentleman that was patient dumped in front of the San Diego Homelessness Response Center. They had been discharged 6 times. From the hospital to the streets, a staff member inside the San Diego Homelessness Response Center said, "Miss Amy, I think you need to check on this gentleman out in front of our building." I go, I check, I evaluate, I do a triage. He is in awful shape. We had to call an ambulance. So that morning, we called 2 ambulances. We actually had video of a Scripps Mercy dumping an elderly woman in front of the Homelessness Response Center at 6:58 a.m. before it's open. Gosh. So we had to call an ambulance for this senior. He was then taken back to the hospital, and one of our volunteers sat with him for 9 hours in the emergency department, having to demand that he be referred into a skilled nursing facility. He is now in a skilled nursing facility where he is getting proper care.
That's
so cool. And now this is, I'm going to go back to this being something that needs to be addressed with older adults and seniors, whether they are housed or unhoused. Our population, our largest population is growing older. We're getting into our geriatric years.
Right, that baby boomer generation, yeah.
Yes, and a lot of folks don't have family members or someone to patient advocate with them. Again, this is something that is impacting housed and unhoused seniors both.
This gentleman that Amy's referring to, they tried to discharge him, And this volunteer, we train people in advocacy, just said, you cannot do this. You can. And so finally, he conferred with his team. The team agreed. And then they discharged him to a skilled nursing facility. If she hadn't been there, he would have been dumped right back out on the street.
For the seventh time.
This is someone with a catheter.
What? Oh, my gosh. With a catheter? My
goodness. Yes. Happens all the time.
Cruel. What is supposed to be the penalty if a hospital gets caught doing this under that law, SB 1152, which took effect in January 2019?
I personally don't know. There doesn't seem to be any consequences.
So that's the problem. They can just continue to do it and maybe not get caught. And even if they do, there's not a lot going on.
Well, and that's kind of where we come in, is not get caught. No one is really tracking or advocating alongside our older adults experiencing homelessness. So this just happens all day and all night long on repeat. And that's kind of where we come in, because we are kind of a niche homeless service provider, that we are the ones that are walking with these older adults from the sidewalk all the way into housing, and even after they get into housing, to help make sure they have all the supports they need once they get housed. Yeah. Again, this is an issue that is impacting housed and unhoused seniors all across America.
Good point, because a senior with dementia who maybe is discharged, if he or she is living alone at their home, they may not really be getting the proper follow-up care either.
We had a wonderful woman who, her landlord dumped her at Alvarado Hospital specifically and evicted her while he had dumped her at Alvarado Hospital. She was discharged from Alvarado, Scripps Mercy, and UCSD Hospital a total of 4 times, all while wearing a pink fluffy robe and house slippers. And she ended up on Washington Street, and some police officers encountered her. And fortunately, I was there, and one of the San Diego Police Department officers said, "Miss Amy, can you help her? We cannot take her to a shelter. We are not going to take her back to another hospital. She has three different packages of hospital discharge paperwork from that very short period of time." Yeah. Like in her possession, in a patient's belongings bag. So we brought her to our hotel. We did an assessment and we just kind of let her settle. And then we took her back to the hospital. And that particular hospital did not have any senior behavioral health beds. So they discharged her. Luckily, we were still with her. We were able to bring her back to our hotel, wait a few days, then take her back to another hospital and advocate, and they were able to finally admit her. It took 6 weeks. Mm. It took 6 weeks for them to give her a cognitive impairment test. The way she got that cognitive impairment test is we were able to locate a distant relative, her sister, that then also started calling the hospital to demand that this senior woman, she's 74, have a cognitive impairment test. Once they did that, they found out, oh my goodness, she has dementia. Now, they had been letting this very lovely senior woman, who at tops weighed 102 pounds, wander the streets of San Diego in a pink fluffy robe,
insane,
her all white hair, and her house slippers.
Yeah, it's just shameful. Shameful. The elderly deserve better treatment than that.
What, and a woman. A woman.
What is it going to take? What is it going to take to change this? And what do you think needs to happen? Both, I guess, at the city level, the county level, and the state level. And maybe someday the federal level, if they can ever get Congress to agree on anything. But here in California, you know, I would think would be a better chance.
So they've already declared this a crisis. Why aren't we behaving as if it is a crisis? Where are the FEMA trailers where we can put people in? Where is the medical personnel that's, you know, parachuting in to help with this crisis situation? It's this
And the housing, you know, I mean, medical personnel are great, but at some point, you know, they can't keep them all in a hospital
forever. We recognize the fact that there is not enough housing and we have a very tight housing market, but there are a lot of people with out of the box ideas about how to offer some human dignity to these people in the meantime, instead of just leaving them on the street.
Yeah, and nobody should dump them camping, in a hospital gown or a bathroom.
Yeah, and I mean, we really hold the mayor and the city council accountable because they know what's happening. And not only are they not trying these out of the box ideas, they're further criminalizing homelessness. The hospitals, like I said, we don't want to demonize the hospitals. They have no place to send these people. And so the same thing goes for the people on the streets when they do these sweeps. There's no place for them to go. So yeah, we're allowing them to be arrested. We're throwing all their things away. And meanwhile, looking the other way when the hospitals.
And actually, that's supposed to be illegal, too. If there are no shelter beds, a court has ruled that it's not supposed to be legal to arrest somebody or move them away for camping on public property, not private property, but public property. So if they're sleeping, you know, on a sidewalk, on a bridge, under a bridge, rather, in a park, in front of City Hall, unless they've been offered a shelter bed and refused it, they're not supposed to be able to do that.
The Housing Commission has a statistic, I'm sorry to interrupt, that of every 100 people that agree to shelter, only 37 get in. So, wow. You know, this is not
what happened to the other. Yeah, the other.
Yeah, we're not just saying, it's not just us saying this is what we're seeing. We now have statistics to back it up.
I think we also, a lot of people are not aware, but a person over age 55 mm-hmm. cannot be placed on a top bunk at a congregate shelter. Mm-hmm. They have to be, for liability purposes, right, on a bottom bunk. So that even reduces bed pool availability drastically for our older adults and our seniors.
It seems like these shelters maybe that are senior friendly, they're specifically set up for seniors where they maybe have, you know, dementia care. But the other thing is that some of them that are discharged, you know, they may not all have dementia, but for the ones who just have something temporary, maybe they've temporarily got, like you say, a catheter in or a surgical scar that's healing and you need to keep it clean. You know, it seems like at minimum there should be some kind of a rehab or recovery facility that they can go into until they're healed enough for it to be safe for them to, if they have to go back on the streets, if there isn't anywhere else, you know?
There is a program. Father Joe's has a respite care program that we are so thankful for, but it's very few beds and it's driven by having specific insurance and you have to be referred while you're in the hospital by a physician. And, you know, it's too little. Obviously, we're happy that they're doing it, but it's just not enough.
More of that. And then what about the person that doesn't have insurance or doesn't have good insurance?
The right kind of insurance, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, it really is just a unique set of barriers and further complications that the older adults face.
Yeah.
And I know that UCSD Hospital, you know, now has a geriatric centric section of their emergency department. Mm-hmm. And I think as a society as a whole, mm-hmm. we're all going to have to become a little more geriatric centric going forward. And there's just a lot of folks, you know, we had another lady. I'm telling you, this is just not okay with me.
Well, it should be okay with anyone.
Well, it seems to be okay with a lot of people, unfortunately. A 72-year-old lady was discharged from the hospital. She was laying on the sidewalk on Washington Street. Very senior lady, and I had called one of the shelters and they said, yes, we would love to take her. We have a bottom bunk. Mm-hmm. You know, she had a wheelchair and everything. And I said, can you come pick her up in your van? They said, yes, we would love to. These two particular shelter staff employees are really just lovely employees. They really care about folks. They came, they assessed her. They couldn't take her.
Why?
because she was in a wheelchair and she could not maneuver the wheelchair by herself. She was not going to be able to get into the shower unassisted. And so myself and these two other outreach workers from another homeless services provider, we had to call an ambulance. Mind you, we are on the corner of Washington and Fifth. We are right next to the hospital. And we all had to call an ambulance for her. And these are two really just phenomenal employees of a another homeless service provider. And they just adored you. They're adults. We got her back into the hospital. Patient advocated and got her referred into a skilled nursing facility.
Right.
They're just, it really, you know, if it would be lovely if, you know, the older adults all had a patient advocate.
You know, that maybe that's needed, a patient advocate for every older adult who's, you know, about to be discharged onto the street, or really anyone who's about to be discharged onto the street who has a serious, you know, medical condition that would make it dangerous.
Serious
on the street.
We're very thorough when we are speaking with people. Now, if someone left against medical advice, that's on them.
I was going to ask that. I did wonder, because I know talking with someone at a hospital, you know, they mentioned to me that sometimes there are people who will either lie to the hospital because they want to get it. Oh yeah, I've got a relative to go stay with, you know, and they wind up on the street, or they just simply refuse to stay. They say, you know, against medical advice, insist on discharging themselves. How many of these might be cases like that versus cases where it was the hospital that decided, you know, to kick the person out?
We are specifically speaking about people who were discharged. We are not speaking about people who left against medical advice.
Got it. Okay.
Because if someone leaves against medical advice, that's their choice. That's their choice.
Yeah, it's sad, but.
I guess my question is, why did you leave against medical advice? What was going on in the emergency department?
Yeah, good question. I've seen some of that. I've seen some of it. I've seen my mother in there when she was 91 with dementia, and they were terrifying her with the constant blood draws, and she was screaming, and, you know, I'm not sure if she could have checked herself.
Also,
if she was able to talk at the time, she probably would have, you know.
People having panic attacks.
It's very frightening. They have dementia.
You don't know what to do. I mean, this is a really kind of scary statistic, and correct me if I get this wrong. When Scripps Hospital responded to some of the news stories yesterday, I believe they said that they treated 10,500 homeless people last year. Is that correct?
10,500.
So that's one hospital having to deal with 10,000. I mean, it's no wonder this is happening. We've left our hospitals with almost no choice. We are not trying to demonize hospitals here. This isn't their job. They are not supposed to be a de facto homeless shelter.
So, you know, it kind of leads us to the next step.
Which is?
So there's a law in place. The hospitals are essentially being forced to break the law because Mayor Todd Gloria in the city of San Diego and Supervisor Fletcher, the board of the county over the city of San Diego.
I wish you had Nora Vargas as the chair now. It was Fletcher, but now, first of the year, it's Vargas.
We have these folks who are in charge and who are patting themselves on the back for, you know, their solutions to homelessness, but they are gravely
falling short.
They are gravely failing older adults and seniors experiencing homelessness.
So you have reached out to supervisors as well as to Mayor Gloria, and you've obviously not had any great success yet. Have you spoken, I'm curious, with Dr. Akilah Weber, who is the assemblywoman that represents part of San Diego, but she also has, I believe, with redistricting, I think she still has La Mesa and some of the portions of East County in her district. But she is a medical doctor and a very caring person. I'm wondering, you know, if you're looking for someone up there to take on this issue in Sacramento who's local.
Thank you for bringing that up, because someone from her staff or from her office did reach out and sent us the link, and we're going to be following up on that to set an appointment to meet with her. And I'm very, very hopeful about that.
Have you had positive reactions from any other politicians? I wasn't able to go to the press conference. Who else was there? Let's give them a shout out if any of them showed up.
No politicians.
No politicians. But you had doctors, and who were they affiliated with?
Well, we had Dr. Meyer, who is a psychiatrist. He spoke on behalf of himself, but he is a psychiatrist at UCSD Hospital. Mm-hmm. He is very well received by people experiencing homelessness.
We had Laura Chechel. She's an adult gerontology clinical nurse specialist, and she's also the American Nurses Association California legislative director. She also spoke.
Here's another, you know, there was a missing Manuela, 88, discharged from Scripps. A Hillcrest community member saw her, called me at 3 something in the morning and said, there is this very elderly senior woman sitting at the bus bench. I'm worried about her. Miss Amy, can you come check?
Yeah.
So we went, we checked, and sure enough, she had been discharged. We brought her to our office and to our hotel to do a quick assessment. And we had just given her a hotel room. And within 1 hour, like, we really weren't even totally complete with an assessment, she wandered off. I immediately called the San Diego Police Department. Right. I said, look, we're in the process of doing an intake with this elderly woman. We don't know what's going on with her, but she has wandered off and this is not sitting right with me. Sure enough, there was already a missing person silver alert out on her.
Wow.
And San Diego Police Department said, well, she's already documented as missing. Her family is looking for her. And I said, oh my gosh, put me in touch with her family right away. Called her family. The silver alert had been out for maybe 2 weeks.
Oh,
there was a silver alert, she had gone to the hospital.
And the hospital didn't know, I guess.
They don't have access. They don't. See, that's one of the challenges we have in San Diego is everyone's in a silo.
Yeah, maybe the police should have to notify hospitals whenever they have a silver alert or a missing person alert of any kind. It should automatically go to every hospital when they get somebody in who's not right in the head or unconscious.
Yeah, if I am understanding this correctly, I believe I've been told because of the HIPAA laws, the hospitals can't tell the police if someone's there. Now, don't quote me on that, but that is my understanding. So again, we have...
Even if they're unconscious?
So not able to speak, they can't...
Yeah, can't communicate with each other. But luckily, you know, we were able to find Manuela after 12 days, and she's in temporary housing now, and she is safe.
That's good.
But
how many others are?
I don't know how to communicate to our general public the alarming rate that we have elderly women just wandering our streets of San Diego.
And women in particular are so vulnerable. I know I've heard someone who was a counselor who works with a lot of the homeless told me a lot of women who are homeless are sexually assaulted on the streets. Maybe it happens to some of the men too, but certainly for women, that's a particular vulnerability.
A little over a month ago, a 72-year-old woman was sexually assaulted, and she's recently unhoused.
Tragic.
So this is a very serious ask for help.
You've reached out on March 17th. You sent your letter to the chairs of these committees in Sacramento. Have you heard anything back from them yet about actually scheduling hearings on this in Sacramento?
And these were letters that civil rights leader Shane Harris helped you draft, I understand.
I believe because Shane Harris did help us with this, he received acknowledgement of receipt of the letter from the assemblyman, but we haven't heard anything from the state senate.
Okay. And these were, I guess we'll read their names, although they're not local. It was Corey Jackson, who chairs the Assembly Human Services Committee, and Marie Alvarado-Gill, who chairs the Senate Human Services Committee.
If people want to add their voice to this, we have a website, housing4thehomeless.org. And if you look, you can see there are some tabs about how to take action. And there is a form letter, and people can find their representative. They can copy the form letter and they can email it off. It's actually a pretty easy process to add their voice to this request.
Okay, so if they want to reach out, whether you're in San Diego or East County or somewhere else, you can go there and sign that petition and get involved. And if someone knows of a vulnerable senior, or somebody listening to this is aware of somebody who's maybe out there on the streets who was wrongfully discharged from the hospital, can they also get in touch with you to try to get help? I know you've said you're limited. Is there a need also for other organizations that can step in and help take some of these people who need housing?
Absolutely, because we are a very tiny grassroots nonprofit. It is Joanne, myself, Linda, and Janice. We are four women out here doing this.
For the whole county.
Yeah. And we are four women. We are four women, and we are all older adults ourselves.
So more volunteers for your organization, maybe, would be one thing. And
we need volunteers, but we would love for, you know, Father Joe's, mm-hmm. Alpha Project, Rescue Mission, Serving Seniors, everyone, PATH Partners, everyone collectively to elevate and more rapidly respond to this very specific population of people experiencing homelessness.
Yeah.
The children and elderly are very, very, very vulnerable. We have a transitional home for moms and children experiencing homelessness. You know, that's a whole nother, you know, issue, crisis in itself. But
yes, we could do a whole show just on that. But
our seniors, they need us. And you cannot reasonably, I always am asking the elders what high school they went to.
Mm-hmm.
And they grew up here. They grew up in San Diego. They raised us. They were our community leaders.
Mm-hmm. And they deserve more help and more dignity as they age, most certainly.
Yeah, we can't just abandon our elders this way.
One other thing, on our website, there is a how to get help button. And it walks you through if it's in a medical distress, a mental health crisis that where the person seems to be a danger to themselves and others, a mental health crisis where they do not seem to be, and then also just if you're requesting outreach. So those are four things that people can do depending on the state of the person they come in contact with. We are way over capacity. Calling us, you'll get our answering machine, to be honest, that says we are over capacity. So we're not a good solution unless we get funding and we can hire a whole team of outreach people.
Well, that's a good point. Do you need, I assume, as a nonprofit 501c3 that you also welcome
yes.
donations?
We also actually found a hotel in the region that's reasonably priced where we could house people, but we have not been able to get the funding to purchase it.
How much do you need?
$10 million.
Okay, so if someone out there is feeling philanthropic and has $10 million, they should get in touch with you.
And we do have a whole business plan already. We have pitched a couple of folks on this hotel location and it's all the costs, because we've been providing hotel rooms and leasing hotel rooms for 3 years now. And so we definitely are very experienced.
Mm-hmm.
In what all it takes to do this. And we found that people are very receptive. People like to help.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
The seniors, you know, like when my kids went to Evans, they used to, you know, go and sing for the seniors. And, you know, we have bingo day.
All kinds of
things. One thing I would say, just to circle back to the hotel, the way it works out is it would be providing housing for people with vouchers and an emergency shelter. And it does have a return on investment if someone had cash of up to 6%. So it's not asking for someone to just give us $10 million. It's actually an investment.
We hear a lot of negatives sometimes about the county voucher program because of the issues of like criminals, you know, that have gone into it. And we just had, you know, a couple of girls assaulted out here by a pair of them wearing ankle bracelets in El Cajon. But it's important, I think, to remember that the vast majority of people who are homeless out there are not like that. And so many of them are simply elderly people. I know I've talked to a few of them myself recently who panicked. You know, they're on a fixed income, no family around to help them. The landlord jacks up the rent suddenly, or they have huge medical bills to pay or something, or the landlord is selling the property and they can't find another place. So they just wind up on the streets, even if they're, you know, 70 or 80 years old. It's just unbelievable.
If you look back in the late 80s and the 90s, we had this crisis and it was called granny dumping. They even named it.
I remember.
Granny dumping. And we are there again in 2023 to granny dumping.
Horrible. I want to read your website and your phone number one more time for people who maybe didn't catch it. If you've tuned in late, listeners, we have been speaking with Annie Zamudio and Joanne Standley, who are co-founders of Housing for the Homeless, talking about the very big crisis of hospitals dumping homeless people in extreme, you know, medical conditions on the streets in the city of San Diego and apparently elsewhere in the county as well. Their website is housingforthehomeless.org, and that's a number four, housing, number four, thehomeless.org, because they're nonprofit. Their phone number is 619-992-9152. And ladies, I'm going to let you have the final word here today. What else would you like our audience to know that I haven't already asked you about today?
I think that we both feel that people are really worried that if they give to a cause or to a nonprofit, they want to make sure that their money is well utilized. And we really believe that a lot of people do want to help, but just don't know how to do that. So just so you know, we only have one employee, one paid employee in our organization, and she's a lived experience expert. Every single penny we have goes directly to serving the population that we serve.
Excellent. All right. Amy, did you have anything else to add?
I'm so grateful that people are starting to care about this issue and that people are starting to care about our seniors in San Diego.
Well, I want to thank you both for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Next up, we'll have some national news stories from Public News Service, and then we'll be back with more East County news.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
He doesn't want to charge people with felonies. So now he turns around purely for political purposes and indicts a former president on misdemeanor offenses that they're straining to try to convert into felonies.
In a speech to a conservative audience, likely presidential candidate Florida Governor Ron DeSantis didn't mention former President Donald Trump by name, but DeSantis called Trump's indictment a weaponization of the law for political purposes. Sources familiar with the closed indictment say Trump has been charged with about 24 counts related to hiding payments to a porn star. Trump, who's already said he's running for the White House, is set to be arraigned on Tuesday in the first of several possible criminal cases. Sunday on Fox News, Trump's former Attorney General Bill Barr said Trump's lack of self-control makes it dangerous for him to take the stand in the New York hush money case.
Generally, I think it's a bad idea to go on the stand, and I think it's particularly a bad idea for Trump because he lacks all self-control, and it'd be very difficult to prepare him and keep him testifying in a prudent fashion.
During a Sunday interview, Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy said there simply aren't the votes in Congress for a federal ban on assault rifles, but he is asking lawmakers to consider a bill that would require training before their purchase.
Ultimately, I want those weapons off the street, but I think we'd be a safer nation if we required just a little bit of training before you bought the most dangerous weapons commercially available.
Murphy said it's unconscionable for the weapons of war to circulate following the shooting at a private Christian school in Nashville, which left six dead. According to the Gun Violence Archive, there have been 130 mass shootings so far this year, more than one per day. New York Governor Kathy Hochul met with education and public safety officials Friday to discuss the more than 200 incidents in the state where someone has made a prank phone call to a school reporting an active shooter.
But I want parents to know that we are taking every single incident very seriously. We treat it as if it's real. But the reality is this is meant to disrupt and cause chaos in our school system and indeed society.
Hochul also said that since the mass shooting at a Buffalo grocery store, the state has issued over 7,000 red flag orders. Under state law, extreme risk orders aim to alert officials about someone who has the potential to harm themselves or others. Finally, former Republican Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson is the latest politician to announce he is running for president in 2024. He is the fourth Republican to announce a campaign following former President Trump, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, and venture capitalist Vivek Ramaswamy. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Lemon Grove's financial manager, Joseph Ware, presented some good news to the city council during his mid-year budget review on March 21st. The revised budget predicts a substantial surplus due mainly to $500,000 more in sales tax revenues than originally anticipated. Sales tax accounts for 35% of all Lemon Grove city revenues. The city also benefited from an increase in the median price of homes sold, meaning more property tax revenues, though the housing market has since slowed down due to rising interest rates. Lemon Grove also had an uptick in retail sales, though that trend may change as COVID-19 restrictions have lifted. Weir urged residents to continue to dine, shop, and spend money in Lemon Grove. A new source of revenue is sales tax from cannabis dispensaries. This figure, too, has been revised upwards by $200,000, from $525,000 to $725,000 for fiscal year 2022-23. It wasn't all positive news. Franchise fees are declining, says Ware, because people are canceling cable services and going to streaming. Staff revised this revenue source downward by about $24,000. A realignment project for traffic signals has gone far over budget, but the city did receive a legal settlement for the project of $482,000. Heartland Fire Department, which serves Lemon Grove, had $90,000 in unscheduled overtime to backfill staff vacancies, and Public Works had a $95,000 increase due to hiring an interim employee to cover administrative work due to an open position, while the city has sought a new Public Works director. There were also added allocations to install new pedestrian crossing signs, repair traffic signals and a sinkhole, and fund a modest increase in street sweeping costs. Overall, taking into account both unanticipated revenue gains and new expenses, the city finance manager reports an anticipated budget surplus of just over $196,000. That's sweet news for Lemon Grove, which only a couple of years ago was struggling with a budget deficit, prompting some community leaders to suggest unincorporating as a city and reverting to county control. Fortunately, that sour economic outlook has turned, and the future for Lemon Grove is looking brighter. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Tribal Report. Born in an era when Native American children were sent off to Indian schools and career opportunities were limited due to prejudice, Josephine Romero, known as Sister, overcame those obstacles to become Verona's tribal chair, a leader who helped usher in Indian gaming in California and establish a museum to teach tribal history and cultural heritage to future generations. On March 26th, she passed away at age 94, but her enduring legacy lives on. She was born on August 22, 1928, to John Curo and Dora Curo Rodriguez. Her family moved to the newly established Verona Reservation in 1932. As a child, she was sent off to the Sherman Indian School in Riverside, run by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, for 6 years, and also attended public school in the Grossmont Union High School District. In an interview with the San Diego Reader back in 1977, she remembered that the BIA school focused on vocational instruction that landed her a job in a laundry the year she graduated. She recalled, "There was a lot of prejudice, I remember, as far as not letting the Indians get an academic education. I guess they thought the Indian wasn't capable of a profession." She worked for many years on the tribe's enrollment committee, served numerous terms as a council member, and led the tribe as chair from 1976 to 1980. She was instrumental in bringing high-stakes bingo to the reservation, helping to develop what became a thriving tribal gaming industry in California today. She also served on a committee that established the Verona Cultural Center and Museum to preserve the tribe's history, language, and culture, overlooked even at other museums on Native American heritage. In an interview with the San Diego Union-Tribune in January 2020, the 20th anniversary of the museum's opening, she said, "We're a lost tribe, so to speak." Casino revenues have reduced hardships for tribal youths, but Romero reflected, "The children growing up today, they know nothing of what we did to survive, how the Indian people had to work to gather the food to eat. That's what we want to teach the children." The museum that she helped establish has become a teaching center not only for Native American children, but also a destination for field trips from public schools and non-Indian visitors. For 75 years, she was married to Benjamin Romero. Together, the couple had 5 children, 16 grandchildren, 29 great-grandchildren, and 9 great-great-grandchildren. According to a tribute posted by her family at legacy.com, she was selfless and served as a role model to everyone who knew her. She dedicated her life to her family and her tribe, and her loss leaves a deep void in our hearts.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting The Sounds of History on East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Now, if you think this week's storms were severe, just listen to this. Back in 1976,
Hurricane Kathleen struck our region, the most powerful tropical cyclone ever to hit San Diego and Imperial counties. With winds up to 90 miles an hour, Hurricane Kathleen dropped a foot of water on Mount Laguna and sent a wall of water 10 feet high and 40 feet wide rushing through the town of Ocotillo in neighboring Imperial Valley, destroying over 70% of the town. Another wave a mile high and 2.5 feet wide swept through Jacumba, demolishing a farmhouse there. The San Diego Union-Tribune said of the Ocotillo nightmare, "There was no warning, just a sudden roar." The powerful storm killed 13 people in California and Mexico. It also washed out Interstate 8, crumbling the freeway and destroying a bridge at Meyer Creek, where a 600-foot-wide section of the freeway was wiped out, leaving a gully in its place about 40 feet deep. Eldo Sanders jumped in his truck to try and save people stranded in Painted Gorge out in Imperial Valley after hearing a call for help on his Citizens Band radio. He never made it. His truck was found overturned in mud, and his body was later found buried in a mud bank. Another resident of Ocotillo, John Patrick Riley, refused to evacuate his home. Rescuers from the Ocotillo Volunteer Fire Department found the 63-year-old man's body inside his home, which had flooded. An El Centro resident, William Mina, is believed to have died when his vehicle was swept off the Meyer Creek Bridge on Interstate 8 by a towering wall of water. Flooding and mudslides destroyed 3 bridges on the San Diego-Arizona Eastern Railway, ultimately leading to abandonment of that railway line. It smashed airplanes at desert airports and turned one plane on its nose in Yuma. A Salton Sea Resort area, Bombay Beach, was completely underwater. Authorities began referring to it as a lake. Most of the 14 cities in Imperial County were utterly inundated. Sheriff's deputies and the Navy airlifted residents out of areas west of El Centro, including an elderly woman trapped when water overflowed her bed. She was saved by sheriff deputies in a flatboat. In San Diego, the storm shut down a Padres game. Out in Imperial Valley, farmers suffered when at least 10,000 acres of sugar beets were wiped out along with many other crops. All routes out of Imperial County except for State Route 111 were shut down all at one time. 80 families were left homeless in Mexicali, and roofs blew off homes 600 miles south of San Diego. Hundreds of homes were destroyed across the region by the powerful storm, which caused $160 million in damage, ranking as one of the worst storms in California history. Alan Zangheim grew up on a ranch in Imperial Valley, and he recalls the flash flood that raced across the desert floor on September 9, 1976. The next morning, he remembers going outside with his dad, believing that the storm had passed. And then, he writes on his website, "We kept noticing some sunlight reflecting off the San Diego Mountains out towards the west. It was like a sparkle. My dad thought it was peculiar, and he said it looks like water. And we listened to the radio shortly thereafter and heard the flash flood warnings. My mom was scared and pretty insistent that we vacate the ranch, and we did. We returned to find out the next morning that a wall of water approximately 10 feet high swept across the Imperial Valley desert floor, wiping out the town of Ocotillo and killing some motorists who were unfortunate enough to be on Interstate 8 at the time the water came through. When we returned to our ranch, it was under 3 feet of water, and my dad's crops were ruined. It was due to this catastrophic incident that we sold our ranch and moved to the San Diego area," Zangheim recalls. He warns that due to the unique geography of Ocotillo, which sits on an alluvial fan below sea level, the same unfortunate events could very well happen again. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Would you like to receive East County Magazine's newsletter with top news weekly from our inland region? You can also sign up for free wildfire and emergency alerts. Stay safe and informed. Sign up for our complimentary emailed newsletter and wildfire alerts at eastcountymagazine.org.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.